if you just go out and you chat with business owners, you can chat with business owners everywhere. If you go rent a car, you can talk to the manager. If you go, maybe not your groceries, but if you go shop for anything, you can. And I've been amazed how there's one question that you can ask almost every business owner, every manager, and it's, how's business going? And I can assure you, just if you're curious, just curious enough to ask this question, they're going to talk for half an hour.
All right, everyone, I'd like to introduce you to Lionel Martin, who may or may not be accompanied during this interview by rare freakish thunderstorms in the UK. But Lionel, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for that, Brennan. I'm always going around with a storm behind me. It adds some drama when I go into a client's meeting. And that's all under control.
It's imposing, isn't it? So tell us a bit about who you are and what you do.
Sure. So I'm a software engineer and a DevOps. I'm from France, and I help tech startups improve how they build and deploy software in the cloud.
And when did you, so how long have you been doing this about?
I've been a software engineer for 10 years, and I've been freelancing for 4 years, and more recently doing more, what I hope is high-value consulting.
Well, that's going to be the focus of this episode, is specifically that. So when you, during the pre-interview, we talked about a lot of the different things that you're currently doing to make a better impression upon your clients and ultimately to get them to pay you more. Things like, as you put it, being more descriptive instead of prescriptive, why you think having a portfolio is a bad thing. Basically all these different tactics I think that you're using. So I think it would be the best thing to do would be, let's just jump right in and start talking about like some of the things that you've been doing that you think have been game changing for you. What led you down the path of making these changes, and what effect have they had on really your business as a whole? So any of these you want to start with in particular?
Yeah, I think I want to start with what it achieves, are all those different iterations on my business, what it effectively created. So if I look backwards 4 years ago, I was probably the typical freelancer in terms of how I run my business. I had typically the roller coaster of income and projects, and that was highly stressful. I had a pipeline for it. Just 2 weeks ahead, I knew what I would be doing, and I was just hoping for the next thing to come.
So everything was kind of just in time. You were just waiting to, when you had a vacant or when you had availability, you try to scramble to find a client, and then you just keep repeating that circle, that cycle again and again, it sounds.
Yeah, exactly. Almost like whenever I would be less busy, I would start reaching out to my network and eventually find a project. But it was absolutely not reputable. It wasn't the best playground to be able to grow a high-value offering.
Right.
And fast forward to probably the past year, the past 2 years, there's been a lot of iterations, but the result is I know exactly what I will be working on in the next 2-3 months. My time is all organized. I know exactly how much bandwidth I have to take on a new client and which service I can provide with my available bandwidth. So yeah, it makes a world of difference. I've been able to organize my business life and also my personal life much better, and travel much more, and having a family, and all the very important things.
Well, let's focus on that. So I want to start with kind of the big picture mindset changes that happened first. So you went from this very more reactive way of freelancing, where you weren't always sure what your next project would be or when it would be, to having really a lot of really good things in place that are keeping you steadily in business. You've changed the dynamic and the tenor between you and your clients. Like you said, there's all these benefits to your lifestyle. What happened first? What mindset changes had to happen before you could implement any of the sort of strategic or tactical changes that have allowed you to get to what you're doing now?
So there's been two main things. The biggest change, and that was a year and a half ago, is I started setting hands-off consulting. And I started being seen by my network and my clients as more strategic and being able to help them without necessarily delivering code.
Okay, so by hands-off consulting, it sounds like you moved away from just being a coder for hire and you got into more. Is that what you mean by hands-off consulting?
Yeah, exactly. Trying to be more than a pair of hands. Even if you're an excellent developer, you still want to be able to do a bit more than that.
Okay.
Because you can only go so far with purely coding in terms of creating an impact, right?
Right, right. Okay, so go ahead. I just wanted to get some clarification on that before you kept going.
So that, I guess that leads us to the role mapping discussion, which is the theme of the season, right? I love the idea of the role mapping. And I think that there are many different versions of role mapping. Literally would be, and that's what you teach yourself in your course about role mapping, it would be this one-off session where you lock time and resources, you spend time with your client, and you try to make sure you understand their needs, and you interview them, and you lock 1 or 2 hours of your time, and you don't do any code, you don't jump in with a solution, you interview them, you try to understand what they really, really need, what they really, really want. And maybe what they think they need is not what they need. So you coach them and you start crafting a solution with them. So that's the most basic form of road mapping. Ideally, at the end of that session, you have a roadmap where you know exactly what you'll be developing for them and how long it will take, and probably even a quote and a full proposal at the end. So what I want to say to your listeners, so if you're a beginner and you've never sold anything else than your code and your time, that's the best way to move forward.
And just to sum that up, it's basically you've changed. So instead of promoting yourself or selling yourself, I should say, as a coder, which is your background, which is also my background, instead what you're doing is before any coding happens, you mandate, and you said it wasn't, I mean, you're just talking, what, an hour or two long session where you sit down with a client and you talk through their business and what they're looking to achieve. And you it sounds like what you're doing is you're mandating that before any code can ever get written.
So the theory behind it, it's the four phases of engagement. In any professional service provider and client relationship, you have those four phases of engagement. I didn't invent it. It's from Blair Enns in his very first book. So the four phases are, the first one is diagnosis, then comes prescription, implementation, and reapplication. And the value of each phase is decreasing in that order. And unfortunately, most engineers, most freelancers who have an engineer background, they jump straight into implementation. If you talk to the average engineer, you talk to them about the problem you eventually have in, in your business or in your website or what, and they jump straight into a solution. Like they jump in and they're like, "Oh, I know you need a different database engine," or "I know you need to develop it in Java." They go straight into the implementation, and if you put yourself in the client's shoes for a second, it's highly frustrating. Because you probably haven't finished explaining the extent of all your problems,
right,
in your business.
Right.
Yeah. And so most freelancers, they don't realize that the first phase, the diagnosis, is of immense value to most clients. Like bringing them the clarity to just define, diagnose the problem, say, okay, well, that's the extent of your problem. That's exactly that. Maybe this actually is not a problem, blah, blah. If at the end of the hour, you've been able to provide a diagnosis about what's going wrong with the systems, with the IT or whatever, that's of immense value. Because think about the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario would be for the client to go for the wrong solution, hire the wrong people, use the wrong technology, invest in something they won't need later on. And it could change the trajectory of their company. So diagnosis is super important. And prescription is when you say, well, actually, that's the solution I recommend. You should implement this to fix your problem. Just that is of immense value, much more than implementation, even if you're the best coder in the world.
Right. So let me ask you this more conceptual question. Why do you think so many engineers resist doing that? Why do they jump to implementation?
I'm unsure. They just love implementing, I guess. And I mean, I love as well. I love coding as well. But I think probably it's a lack of empathy of putting themselves in the client's shoes and just realizing the client situation and how having more information and diagnosis makes a wealth of difference.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head there with empathy. I think, you know, really there's the matter of empathy, which is, you know, not to sound too highfalutin or philosophical here, but basically it's a matter of understanding why is this client willing to even spend any money on this thing on me, right?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us don't really think that through. We don't think, you know, why is somebody willing to pay a lot of money to somebody like me? And until we know why, it's really hard for us, like you were saying, to ensure that we're going to deliver the right work. But I think the other thing is, it's more of a matter of comfort, right? So for the average engineer or the average designer or the average writer, or regardless of what it is you do, we have an extensive background in getting good at what we do. So as an engineer, you spend a lot of time getting good at your craft, learning engineering and so on. And when you start to need to do things that kind of take you out of that safe zone, and you're needing to now talk business or talk high level conceptual, which of course has a direct impact on the engineering that'll happen. It's still, I think what a lot of people, and I know this firsthand from building my agency, is that a lot of freelancers specifically do want to just write code all day. And the unfortunate thing is, and this is something that I think always people resist hearing, a lot of people resist hearing, is that if you really want to do your craft all day long and not do the business side of things, then a full-time job is probably your best bet, right? So I think what I'd be curious to hear now would be, first, did you have any hesitations going into focusing on the business side of things? And if so, how did you overcome them? And do you have any things that you've, because obviously you're not, you know, you run your business, but you don't run the businesses of your clients. What have you done to make it so you're confident and able to sit down with a client who could work in any given industry and talk with them about their business and their needs in a way that you're confident that you're able to actually deliver value to them?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's like you said, it's mainly a mindset thing. I think the minimum they need is, you need curiosity and just the will of helping in the first place. And if you have that, I think it's easy to realize that the best way to help is first to be able to listen. Like, it doesn't take some massive coaching skills to get into a value conversation and right, like typically a road mapping conversation, to listen and just ask the right question. And this applies in your professional life, in your industry, but it just applies, like, as a person. If you just go out and you chat with business owners, you can chat with business owners everywhere. If you go rent a car, you can talk to the manager. If you go, maybe not your groceries, but if you go shop for anything, you can. And I've been amazed how there's one question that you can ask almost every business owner, every manager, and it's, how's business going? And I can assure you, just if you're curious, just curious enough to ask this question, they're going to talk for half an hour.
Yes.
And you won't have to do anything.
And
what's funny about that question is, most of the time, you realize that people talk about the systems in their business. They don't talk about the craft. So if you ask, you can even ask like an ice cream truck, hey, how's business going? And they won't talk to you about ice cream, how they do ice cream. They will talk to you about how they generate lead, how they advertise, how they hire and like their difficulties to hire, to advertise, the difficulty to, invest in some more hardware or whatever. And that's a very universal question. So if you're just curious enough to ask this high level question, you're going to see the same patterns everywhere, and you'll be able to get into that conversation. And eventually down the road, you might find a problem that you can solve with code.
Okay, so you mentioned going and just talking with business owners. Has that for you resulted in direct clients, or is it more of just a way to gain experience in talking with people about business?
It's more for the mindset, and it's more for the curiosity and the conversation skills. And it can bring clients.
Right, it can, but it's probably going to be more accidental if one of those people do turn into a client. It's more about, like you said, just getting more comfortable, getting more confident in your ability to talk business with people.
Yeah, but it's also a great way if you talk to a qualified lead and you approach them like that. First, they see you as completely different. Like, they see you as more than an engineer, as a business person. They can explain what needs to be improved in their company, and that's the best discussions, the best conversations. And and that can result into clients. But I guess you should do it out of curiosity in the first place. Not to try to create client in a few minutes.
Right. So let me ask you about how you get clients. So you had mentioned in your pre-show notes that you're not a big fan of portfolios. What are some of the things that you've been doing, or some of the strategies you've used to consistently, you mentioned earlier on, you're what, 2 or 3 months booked out. How does that happen? What are some of the things you're doing? It's all good and well that you have a road mapping strategy for when you get a qualified lead, but what are you doing to get those qualified leads in the first place?
Now, it's mainly the past few months, it's been from content marketing. So it's been from writing about my craft and just writing. And I started having some very well qualified leads, but I think I don't like when I hear, but at the time, maybe 2 years ago, I was always hearing someone saying that exact same thing. They get to be so rosy and easy. But I think it's
blog and somehow clients will come to you.
yeah, exactly. But you got to see the full picture. So, to your listeners. So I would not credit just that as a way to get clients. I'm not sure where to start, to be honest. There has been like 20 or 50 iterations over the past years.
Well, imagine you were to pivot into, imagine that you learn how to do, I don't know, some new thing like marketing automation, and you had to effectively start from scratch. All the content you produced so far about some of the engineering stuff you do would be for nothing. What is something you would do now that you wouldn't have known to do even a few years ago?
One thing I got wrong in the beginning is that's what creates the roller coaster. It's definitely hourly or daily bidding. That's terrible. Like it's you want to avoid that as much as possible. And focusing on strategy, like we said, like having those strategy conversations and productizing. So productizing has been the second most strategic move in my business. So the way I productize is I only have 3 levels of engagement. And I recommend that to any freelancer. If you're hourly bidding or daily bidding, or you just have projects, some big projects, some small projects, big clients, small clients, it's all over the place. You don't know, it's very hard to organize yourself and your time. Do productize. So the way it's working, I have 3 levels of engagement, and they're all of different bandwidth. And they're all 1 month long or eventually 3 months long. The highest level of engagement would be between 2 and 4. I would invest 3 to 4 days a week into developing whatever I'm building for my clients. There's a smaller engagement, which is around 2 days a week. And finally, there's my consulting engagement, which is hands off, no code, maybe 1 or 2 weekly calls. And it's one point of contact, and I'm here to help them, to lead them through maybe a strategic change or strategic build or migration or something like that. And they have no choice. It's 1 month long or 3 months long. So I immediately know that if I take on a new client, that I'm booking out a certain bandwidth for the next 3 months in my calendar, and I have that much left, and it's very easy to see things coming. You know exactly to the day when you'd be you would have freed up time and where you can take on a new client. That makes the whole thing 10 times easier.
And it sounds like you're able to do that because you have a very specific, very productized way of working. Whereas, you know, when I started out doing software consulting early on, I should say software freelancing or software contracting, it would be for, you know, building products or projects that didn't necessarily have an end date, that didn't really know like when it would be complete. And yeah, for me, at least, scheduling was always really difficult. But I completely hear what you're saying about when you move towards this more packaged, productized way of selling, you've been able to effectively figure out, okay, this is my availability for any given, say, month. And that means this is how many new clients I can bring on, because each one has this kind of 3 month long fuse, right? And it just makes it really simple for you, where you've got, I'd imagine a big part of what's made this easy for you is, after productizing, not only is the scheduling of yourself and your future work and so on significantly easier, but the selling and the positioning of that productized service to, you know, during these initial road mappings and so on, is also a lot easier, because you know exactly the needs they have. You know exactly how to position this 3 month long service against those needs. And it's much easier to sell that outcome versus just saying, I'm a coder for hire. You can pay me this much a day if you wanted to. Do you need any coding help? Which is a really hard, from the client's perspective, it's very hard to figure out, well, what would I do with Lionel as a coder for me? Versus if Lionel's saying to them, here's exactly how I can help you. Here's exactly what the service would look like. Here's exactly the time and money commitments on your end, you know, and so on. That's a much easier sell. And it's also a much easier thing, I would say, to manage internally in your own business.
Yeah, absolutely. It changes. It's hard to describe how much it changes the relationship with the client as well. So, going back to road mapping for a second, and so my lightest option, my option one of engagement, is literally an ongoing road mapping. It's like an ongoing consulting, coaching about some parts of the business. And it fundamentally changes the relationship with the client. And here's why. And you explain that very well on your road mapping course landing page, right? You have to realize that 99% of professional services firms and agencies, they pretend to deliver advice about what should be built, like as a website or as a, you know, sales funnel or whatever it is they design and build, but they're not paid for it, so they just deliver the most biased advice to push for the services, and it's disguised as impartial advice. It's like, oh, we're gonna have a conversation, and you know, they make it sound like it's an open conversation, but it's they're pushing for the services, and what they try to sell is, so to sell more hours. Usually, obviously, they will advise for only what they can do, but what they have the resources for, the developers for. I've seen them sometimes advising for what they want to get into, so basically using the client as a play field for, you know, for them to specialize into a different field. And sometimes even they push for the internal projects, like the side project, and they get the clients financing that. So, and the clients aren't fooled. They are surrounded by this fake biased advice. And when you as a freelancer, you come and you say, well, I have an offering, I have a product where it's just advice, and I have no interest in pushing you one way or the other. Trust me, you would be the first person they've seen doing that in the last 100 person they talked to. So that's a huge differentiator, and that's what road mapping is. Is you need to strive to get into the business of coaching, leading, giving advice without coding. Like you need to do as a freelancer, try to do that. At least, start with one session.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the resistance people have is they hear the without coding part and they're like, well, I like to code. I don't want to just be a talk consultant type person. But I think the big thing is it's a matter of just saying like, look, you know, I mean, when, you know, I'm a kind of an amateur pilot type person. And so I really am interested in aviation. And when you get on a plane and you see the pilots up in the front, they're talking amongst themselves about the flight plan and about, you know, where they're about to go and so on. They don't just, you know, go turn on the engine, go to the runway and take off, right? Like they plan. And obviously, I mean, it's a contrived example, but the fact remains is that...
No, that's a great example. Yeah,
but, you know, it's one of these things that I think a lot of, especially engineers, I think a lot of us push back at the idea of like waterfall development, right? And that was the big kind of like monster way back when in Agile, where you just kind of do everything more or less on the fly, was like the saving grace of big upfront planning and so on. But from my perspective, for me, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, it was never about going in, you know, when I think waterfall, I think planning exactly what every form will look like, every this will look like, and all this upfront. It's more about just saying directionally, where do we need to get to? Where are you now? Why is now bad? Why is there better? And how can I best help you get there without needing to go in and doing a lot of upfront, let's figure everything out before any line of code has been written. It's not about that. It's more about on the conceptual kind of business wavelength, figuring that out. Instead of thinking, and this is the pushback I hear, is that people think we're basically advocating for waterfalls. It's not that. It's more about really figuring out the business case and what needs to be solved. And then you could still do, you know, your usual kind of agile sprints or whatever you want on top of that.
Yeah. So you just made at least two great points. So the first one, the analogy with aviation is actually interesting. Why do you think they consult before, you know, switching the engines on and just taking off? It's because it's freaking risky. They're in a very risky business. If they got it wrong, if they don't check that everything's all right, people are going to die. So obviously it's not the same thing in our industries, but there are a lot of projects. If you actually do the math, if they go wrong, you're talking about the company potentially losing hundreds of thousands. Like, it's easy to imagine a business case where if they make the wrong decision, they're gonna lose millions in the next couple of years. If they hire the wrong people, if they build the wrong team, if they build the wrong technology, if they just architect the thing in a poor way and they throw 10 people developing at it. So maybe for your listeners, some of your listeners who aren't too keen on doing something else than code, maybe they need to assess the risk for the client, and maybe it's more risky than they think. And those are points you were making about moving from the waterfall style of development to something a bit more agile, where there's constant advice during the relationship. My point with that is that it's really what's for now. So you need to be able to, I'm not sure where I'm getting on with that.
Well, I think what you're saying is, I mean, the things I'm hearing are, it's risky. And this is something that I really think that a lot of people think, well, the thing they're risking is the money they spend on me. But there's also the risk of any reputational impact that a bad project or bad delivery can have. There's the opportunity cost and, well, we just spent 6 months doing this. We did the wrong thing. Now we need to backtrack and then maybe spend another 6 months and spend more money. So there's that angle too. There's a lot of different risks that go beyond just, you know, maybe the money. And I think a lot of us say like, oh, well, they spent, you know, say $20,000 on us. They're a big company. That's nothing to them. But it is a big deal often, especially when we know, which is one of the reasons I think we advocate for road mapping, is that when you know what's at stake, you end up naturally building a better product at the end of the day. But the other thing that I would add from the aviation perspective is these are pilots who have clocked, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of hours flying. Yet every time they go to do anything, they basically read off a checklist, right? Like they have a checklist of this is how I start the engine. This is how I do this before they go to take off on a runway. I mean, we don't hear this as passengers, but whoever is flying, whether it's the pilot or co-pilot, they'll basically read out loud, like, this is our plan. If we don't, if we lose altitude or something immediately after takeoff, we're going to do this. We're going to turn to this direction. We're going to circle back and do this. And if this ends up happening, we're going to do that. And they talk it through before they go, you know, full power and take off. And they plan for those, you know, those edge cases, right? So it's such a interesting field when you look at the, and I think a lot of us might be skeptical saying that's overkill. We don't need processes. We don't need systems like that. We're just building software. We're just designing stuff. But I think what we're saying is that if you take that mentality and you apply it to, look, we're about to go on this journey together, me and the client. What can we do? How do we have contingency plans that will say, are we going in the wrong direction? And if so, if we are going in the wrong direction, how do we course correct and fix that? Your clients want this. They want to know that you're taking care of them.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big thing, is it's not just a way to get paid to do like upfront discovery work or anything like that. It's just a way to make sure that really you're protecting them. You're taking care of them.
Yeah, exactly. That takes us back to empathy. So even if it's a big company, there are a lot of people taking risks. So, I mean, if you're working on a big enough project, there are a lot of things at stake. So they have some of the people's career. They have some, like the customer. If the customers are heavily relying on them, there are all those people where you can't just push some software without making sure it's going to work. So I strongly recommend for the freelancer who's never done that to start asking more questions, start mapping out all the things that might go wrong, and realize that there could be a lot of risk, and there should be a professional, there should be an ethical professional, and really helping taking care of the client, like you just said, like caring for them.
Right. Perfect. So last question I have for you before you go. You mentioned in the pre-interview that when you're on, I presume, a road mapping call with somebody, you basically issue the proposal over the call and get them to buy then and there versus emailing them later or something like that. Can you describe what that looks like for you?
Yeah, sure. So the idea is it's very productized. So I have a very small overhead for each project. So maybe 4 years ago, I would invest a lot of time in talking to that client, nurturing the lead, uncovering their needs, and spending even more time into writing a very precise proposal and then negotiating it and so on and so forth. That's a terrible way to do it, because for so many reasons. First, you invest so much time up front, and second, like you, I think that was the point you were making with the waterfall approach, is no project is that rigid. So as soon as you start working on the project, you start designing or developing your software, you're going to uncover more needs, you're going to have questions, and you will want to pivot all the time. And that's how you would do if it was your own software, if you weren't working for your clients. I don't like this massive sales cycle at the beginning, and I've been working very hard to just remove it completely. And what I replaced it with is usually it's just an hour on the phone. It is road mapping. And at the end of that hour, I've decided with my client which of the three options I have is the best for them. So would we go for 1 month or 3 months? And would we go for just the option one, the option two, option three? Option three being the biggest investment of my time. And we just decide that.
And you decide it mutually, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So the theory, and they know the price as well. So there's no, what I avoid as well is being basically, I'll come back to you with a proposal sometime next week, blah, 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 and we'll take it from there. It's awful. Don't do it. So the theory behind it is from Win Without Pitching as well, from Blair Ends, where he says they should, as in the client, they should hear it before they see it. So you should, if you send a proposal 1 week later, you put tons of work, you put a price down, you send it, and then you wait, you have absolutely no control of the conversation. You can't hear what they think. You can't buzz the objection. So you have to do it live on the phone and just right here at the end of the hour. Usually what I do is like, okay, I think you should go for the option one. It's £2,600 per month. Those are the conditions. It has to be paid up front. You have open access to me. There are only two points of contact, blah, 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 all the terms and conditions. And usually they say yes. And I just have a button in my CRM that I've automated with Drip and Zapier. And they receive a templated proposal with everything hard-coded, with a few notes that come from my CRM.
That's great.
And I'm literally on the phone and I'm like, okay, well, you just received the proposal. And I don't even call it a proposal. I think you just received an email, basically, where I detail everything. And there's a button at the end that goes to Typeform and that generates the invoice for them. And I'm like, well, you click on the button and you receive the invoice. And the first time I've done that, and I was so excited, the first time I've done that, I was on the phone with that client, just an hour. I just talked to them maybe 10 minutes before at a conference. They booked an hour. We chat for an hour. At the end of the hour, we know exactly which option they want, what's the business goal. I click the button, they receive the thing. I hang up and I jump onto another call and I receive an email from or a text from that client 10 minutes later, oh, I've done the wire transfer. And
that's fantastic.
And that removes, that frees up so much brain time and that makes you so happy that you just, yeah, next time you chat to that client, there's no admin, there's no, you know, like is the payment on its way? There's no this awkward conversation. And like from day one, for the first hour, you jump straight into it, and you you just work for them, and you have nothing else in mind. Your time is booked, your payment is there. There's no admin, there's no invoice to chase, and you just work and you just help them the best you can.
Well, what's great is, I mean, you've got not only does it make your life a lot easier and so on, but it's also, from my experience, you look really professional to your clients when you can do. I mean, it's obvious you've done this before. You're on the call with them. You've got a very defined system, a process for working with them. And people really like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've often been asked, what's the return of investment of coding all those systems? And they're like, oh, so do you save time? Do you save worry? And like, actually, the biggest return on investment is how professional you look and how you direct them. Because when everything is productized and templated, like as much as you can, the conversation is much less open in terms of how we work together. You don't even push for it. You just say, well, this is how I work. Those are the three options. I do it like that because it's the best way to serve you. I know from experience. And it's usually this conversation is done in 1 minute. And then we talk about their business, their challenges, their objectives. And it's just a much better conversation, much better relationship.
Absolutely. Well, Lionel, this has been fantastic. It's been awesome just hearing how your business has evolved into this very systematic, very professional way of delivering really great results to your clients. And, you know, I love hearing this stuff, and hopefully for the listeners listening, just kind of it's obviously you're passionate about what you do. You know why you do the way you do things, the way you do things. And that's made a direct impact on not only your business, but also your lifestyle. So if people want to find out more about you, is getlionel.com the best place to go?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can read more about what I'm doing on getlionel.com. And there are links to what I've published on Medium, some about freelancing, but also some more technical articles. And yeah, and you can also reach out to me at hi@getlionel.com, hi@getlionel.com. If your company is in need of, the tech leadership is in need of technical coaching, that's what I focus on now.
Perfect. Well, Lionel, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you very much, Brennan. It was a pleasure.